content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Shadate Hargett Hill reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the November issue of O Magazine. You know, next week is Thanksgiving, so this week we'll be talking about some recipes, giving thanks with the Gratitude-O-Meter, and some other special stories about Thanksgiving and being grateful. First, let's talk about a little bit of the contributors and their Thanksgiving recipes. The first contributor, Tayari Jones, author, The Secret Garden. A recipe I'm famous for is blackberry jam cake. We bake it on Thanksgiving, drench it in rum, and leave it covered until Christmas. The smell of it is the official start of the holiday season. The celebrity I've invited over for dinner is Toni Morrison. I've been intrigued by her wild and brilliant imagination since I read The Bluest Eye in high school. Another one from Joanna Saltz, Delish.com editorial director, The Right Fluff. A recipe I'm known for is my spinach and artichoke dip. I brought it to my husband's family's Thanksgiving dinner, unsolicited, about a decade ago. Now I'm forced to bring it every year. My most memorable Thanksgiving was when I was a child, and my mom made a dinner reservation for us at the Plaza Hotel in New York City. I've never felt as special as I did that day. In O's questions this month, we wondered, what's your favorite thing about Thanksgiving? It goes, being in America for the holiday after living overseas in New Zealand, I love the opportunity to value my culture, family, and of course, my aunt's sweet potato pie that came from Victoria Gather, Washington, D.C. Putting the turkey in the oven at 3 a.m. so when my kids wake up in the morning, they smell the wonderful aroma. It reminds me of my childhood when my mom did the same thing for me and my siblings. Navita Young from Brooklyn. The time I have with my husband when our guests leave, we have full bellies and full hearts after spending the day with our family, and we can lie on the couch and watch movies knowing all is right with our little world. We might even sneak in a nap or two. Joyce Staith from Tell City, Indiana. As a tradition, my grandchildren write the year and what they are thankful for on our special tablecloth. Every year we look back and laugh about how the answers have changed as they've grown. Toni Weaver from Mesherstown, Pennsylvania. Serenity. I find Thanksgiving to be a cozy, calm time to breathe deeply, feel gratitude, and reflect between the oppressive heat of summer and the chaos of Christmas. Gwen Harvey, Middleburg, Florida. Asking the question, what are you thankful for? Everyone has to answer before I serve dessert. It starts out with a lot of laughter, but ends with so much more love in the room. Karen Lichberger, Clifton, New Jersey. All the togetherness of Christmas without the pressure of gifts, unless food is considered a gift, then gift on. Lilani Brooks of Los Angeles. And those are the questions that were answered for this month's What Your Favorite Thing About Thanksgiving Is. In Living Your Best Life from All Too Awesome, five things you'll be thankful for this Thanksgiving. This is the Gratitude Meter. Big reveals. Fight your food coma with a round of the voting game. Players select a cheeky prompt. Say who would be the best double agent, and then choose someone in the group it best describes. Say on Margaret, fun is all relative. You can find out more about that at player10.com. Cream of the crop. We all screamed for sweet potato casserole ice cream. One of Salt and Straw's holiday pints puts a cool spin on the classic dish, swirling together candied pecans, marshmallow fluff with a base of you-know-what scooped on it. And there it is. Find it at saltandstraw.com. Get a riff of this. Spotify's Turkey Timer generates playlists of various lengths based on your bird's poundage. Each genre-specific curation features family-friendly tunes and ends with a ding when it's time to check the oven. Find it at thanksgiving.withspotify.com. That's the spirit. These freezable ice cube packs come pre-mixed with herbs and bitters to make three different equally delicious cocktails. The fuss-free mixology means you can whip up a drink with one hand. Just pour your liquor of choice over a cube and stir, and whisk gravy with the other. So what will it be? Herb and Lois, that's herbandlouse.com. Herb, H-E-R-B, and Lose, L-O-U-S.com. For good measure, so many leftovers, so little Tupperware. Paging the guestometer. Simply plug in the number of guests and menu, and the free online calculator will determine just how much turkey and stuffing and cornbread you need for a precisely sized feast. Go to SaveTheFood.com. Cinema Paradiso. Fall's must-see coming attraction, a female-led review site. Entertainment journalism can be a bit like the Little Rascals crew, a boys' club. In 2017, nearly 80% of film critics were men, meaning the opinions that shape which movies you see come largely from those whose tastes might differ profoundly from your own. I've been told many times there's no market for a female comedy, says filmmaker Miranda Bailey. Then you understand. The people telling us what's worth our money are mostly white men. This year, Bailey is flipping the script. Along with the digital media executive Rebecca Odes, she's launched Cherry Picks, a site that features only female critics reviewing film, TV, music, and more. Each project's rating goes beyond a red tomato, green splat, binary, earring, a bowl of cherries, don't miss it, two cherries, really good, one cherry, maybe watch on Netflix, or the pits, don't bother. Says Odes, if we can change how films are received, we can change what projects get made next. Sounds bowl of cherries worthy to us. And feeling good. We have some mind, body, and soul. Rest for the weary. If you don't have the luxury of jetting off to Palm Springs for a wellness retreat, relax. No extra money or time is required to take a mental vacation. The sensory experiences of everyday life offer built-in opportunities for many getaways. Through really savoring your next snack or drink, give all your attention to the flavor, texture, and smell of whatever you're consuming, said Andy Budakam, co-founder and voice of the meditation app Headspace. Hot tea is a great choice for this practice since you sip it slowly. You'll get more satisfaction and you'll mute stressful inner chatter. Puttycum says, another way to take a break from your head, feeling your feet pressing against the ground as you walk. When your mind wanders, bring back to that same sensation, says Puttycum. When you're not lost in thought, you may see the world in a more vivid color and appreciate your life in a whole new way. How refreshing. Hold the phone. Calling all distracted, disinterested diners. We've got a surprising cure for dull table talk. That hedgehog in the teacup on Instagram could ruin your dinner. Here's the deal. In 2017, researchers at the University of British Columbia recruited more than 300 people to share a meal at a restaurant with family and friends and randomly assigned them to either leave their phones on the table or put them away. Those who could keep an eye on their phones reported enjoying themselves less than their unplugged peers. When people aren't fully engaged with the situation around them, they may wrongly attribute their feelings of distraction to boredom, says study author Ryan Dyer, a social psychology PhD student at the university. Dyer compares distracted conversation to absent-minded snacking. You can't really enjoy chocolate if you're not even fully conscious that you're eating it. So how do you get everyone to stash their screen? Tell them about Dyer's study. Telling them about Dyer's study might do the trick, since awareness, he says, is an important step toward changing behaviors. Or try making it a game. First person to grab his or her phone at the table has to do the dishes or foot the bill if you're eating out. You may discover that your nephew's study abroad shenanigans are more entertaining than any palm-sized prickly pet. At ease, say goodbye to twinges and tenderness with these head-to-toe pain relievers. Stand and deliver. If you're on your feet all day, this ergonomic mat has got your back and hips and knees made with a patent gel foam combo. It's cushy enough to allay all over soreness and classy enough for your recently remodeled kitchen. Elite comfort floor mats from $120 each. You can get them at jailpro.com. Here's the rub. The versatile velvety cream with ingredients like anti-inflammatory cannabinoids, antibacterial manuka honey, and shea butter can soothe cracked hands, calm sore elbows, and reduce redness. CBD Healing Skin Balm, $58 at Kanuka.com. That's CANNUKA.com. Potent Potable. Ginger? Roger? This spicy potion, drink it straight or tossed in a hot toddy, blends the restorative root with lemon honey and berry tea to ward off cold symptoms and body aches. $66 for a six pack at Annie's Ginger Elixir.com. That's Annie's Ginger Elixir.com. Need a lift? Meet the Bentley of sports bras with foam underwire, padded straps, full coverage cups, and sizes up to 42G. High impact convertible sports bra, $72 at Chantel.com. Main squeeze. Step right up and into the non-bunching and non-clinical looking compression socks, which can help reduce pain and pressure in swollen legs by increasing circulation. Compression socks in cosmic purple. $30 at dressgals.com. That's DRSEGALS.com. Good vibrations. A 3-speed pulsating foam roller can stimulate and de-stiffen muscles faster than a stationary one. Wake and shake. Find it Viper 2.0 foam roller in green, $210 at hyperice.com. That's hyperice.com. November 2018. Have you ever received a gift that was especially sweet? Something marvelously kind, fabulously helpful? If so, you'll understand the feeling behind the heaping helping of gratitude served up on the pages to come. After facing life-threatening illness and terrible recent loss, Tina Turner talks with Oprah about what keeps her strong. Meet three households putting their own spin on Turkey Day, new traditions, meaningful rituals, and some really delicious kimchi. Who or what do you need to thank? Gratitude isn't just a concept we should visit gradually over roasted turkey. It's a mindset that's been scientifically shown to help nourish body and mind, improving sleep, easing depression, boosting immunity, and lowering stress. The best news? You can conjure it anywhere, whether you're admiring a sunrise over Anchor, Watt, or a ladybug in your backyard. No matter the size, shape, or occasion, any bit of thankfulness is guaranteed to do you good. Here's a quick mental exercise. Sit for a moment and think about who deserves your thanks. Chances are your short list will include worthy recipients like a parent, a sibling, or a treasured teacher. But when you dig deeper, you might discover some less likely beneficiaries. The decisions, serendipitous events, and even ordinary objects that have, as if by some cosmic fluke, conspired to improve your life. Here, some thank you notes and intimate conversations that move you to express a surprising heartfelt declaration of your own. Dear Chunky, in spring 2014, my best friend Raya called with very bad news. She just bought herself an expensive purebred French bulldog puppy. After her last dog died a few years earlier, rest in peace, Ricky, Raya swore she wouldn't get another pet. She was in her 50s, happily single, never more at peace with life, and didn't want the responsibility. But then she was walking past a pet store in New York City one afternoon, and the owners had put a bunch of adorable puppies in the window, and a tiny little smushed in white face had stood out among the fury. Raya took one glance and fell in love. Next thing you know, she was plucking down thousands of dollars she didn't have on a puppy she named Chunky. I disappeared entirely. First of all, you don't spend a fortune. I disapproved entirely. First of all, you don't spend a fortune on some creature overbred in a puppy mill. You just don't. You go to a rescue shelter and adopt, because that's the only moral way. Second, I didn't like Chunky's look. Forgive me, but I think a dog should come equipped with both a snout and a tail, and he possessed neither. French bulldogs are mutants, once noble canines ruined by humanity's dumb instinct to genetically engineer cuteness. They have an underbite, buggy eyes, respiratory issues, and a squatty little body, bow-legged limbs, and unholy combination of pygmy hippo, albino walrus, runty piglet, and Ralph Wiggerman. Lastly, Chunky was kind of a bull-headed jerk. I mean, he is French. He wasn't affectionate enough, operating with a cat-like vibe. For 2 years, he mostly stared at me with an air of icy disapproval. I regarded him much the same way. Then in spring 2016, I got a call from Raya with really bad news. She'd been diagnosed with pancreatic and liver cancer, and it was terminal. The bottom fell out of my heart. Raya was more than my best friend. She was my person. We'd known each other for 17 years, and she had become my anchor, my protector, my hero, my source of joy and comfort. She was my first call in times of emergency or celebration. She was the one person in the world I felt I could not live without, and now she was going to die. After her diagnosis, I was forced to confront an inconvenient truth, which is that Raya was the love of my life. I had loved her for years, but kept it under wraps, even to myself in some ways, because I was married and didn't want to cross that line. But I couldn't let her die without being honest about who she really was to me. So I told her. She told me she loved me too. I left my marriage to move in with Raya and be with her at last. It all happened very quickly. Everyone could see this truth between us. What followed over the next 18 months was a beautiful, horrible story of love and loss. But it's one for another day. Today, we're talking about Chunky. At first, Chunky and I were obviously not so psyched to be living together. We saw each other, I think, as rivals for Raya's attention. I had trouble sleeping in Raya's bed because she slept there too. Of course, I took over Chunky's care. And I bathed him, fed him, cleaned the junk out his eyes, all of this when Raya got sicker and weaker. And of course, you know, French bulldogs snore. Of course, this French bulldog, as others, always have junk in their eyes. As I told you before, I cleaned out his eyes. And I walked him. I have always needed to take daily walks to clear my head. And Chunky turned out to be a terrific walking companion. Soon that little truffle pig and I were logging 5 miles a day. I guess he's okay, I thought. He seemed to think something similar about me. He began sleeping on my side of the bed. Then Raya got really sick. There were strangers coming in and out of the house, nurses, doctors, panicked friends. Disease and drugs and pain altered the way Raya acted, walked, smelled, spoke. There was a period when she became angry and hard. She was so damn pissed to be dying, and she went wild in her rage. Chunky became afraid of her, and for a while, forgive me, Raya, so did I. Thank God Chunky needed his many walks. All I can say, four times a day, I was forced to leave that apartment full of death and sadness and take Chunky into the bright, fresh air. Without him, I would never have left Raya's side, and that would have been terrible for me and her. Death is a personal experience, and sometimes people just need to be alone with their dying to feel it for themselves. In her final 2 months, Raya grew gentle and tender again. She was so beautiful. I'd never seen such luminous in a face. She didn't want to go, but knew she had to. Chunky and I would lie with her in bed for hours, just gazing at her. Raya mostly slept, but she was so happy when she woke, knowing we both were there. She didn't ask if I'd take care of him after she died. We all knew I would. When somebody you love is close to death, your world becomes terribly small. At the end, my world had become the size of the bed upon which she lay. But because of those 4 daily walks, I was able to remember that I still belong to the world of the living and the world of trees, a world of sky, a world that did not have cancer. On the day before Raya died, Chunky needed 4 walks. On the day she died, he needed 4 walks. On the day after she died, and on the day of her funeral, and on the day of her cremation, he needed 4 walks. And in the 10 months since the love of my life died, Chunky has taken me out nearly 800 times. My life cannot collapse into a dark world of grief because he cannot. I must go on because this guy needs to go out. We take our walks and strangers swoon over him. I say, his name is Chunky and he's the best. Chunky is handsome and brave and loyal and wise. He sleeps in my arms. We spend every moment of the day together. 4 years ago, when she bought that puppy, maybe Raya was just following some divine instruction, getting the dog for me as solace for after she was gone. I don't know. I don't know how anything works. I'm just grateful for the woman Chunky and I both loved and for his life and mine. Elizabeth Gilbert, author of, most recently, Big Magic Creative Living Before Beyond Fear. Dear Acrylic Nails, before you came into my life, when I used to meet someone for the first time, I jammed my hands in my pockets to avoid a handshake, worried the person would notice my chewed nails and the cuticles I'd picked to shreds. Nail biting was a sort of hand-edged self-soothing, a painful but effective way to expand uneasy energy. I bit my nails below the quick, so low that cold air made my fingertips sting. Periodically, I'd swear off my addiction, wear white spa gloves around the house, and give myself preventive manicures. But I could not, would not stop. Then one day, while I was sitting at a Starbucks, worrying over grad school applications, a man I didn't know came up to me I looked terrible gnawing on my thumbnail. My eyes filled with tears. I never felt more exposed. Biting my nails was like hanging a neon sign around my neck that read, "To cope, I hurt myself." A friend once told me, if you want to stop biting your nails, get acrylic ones. I'd always resisted thinking of the corn chip salons my mom's colleagues sported during my childhood, the ones she disdainfully called secretary nails as well. I was way too outdoorsy and low maintenance for those. But weeks after weeping in that Starbucks, I found myself watching in rapt horror as a manicurist sanded my nails until they were paper thin, glued on plastic tips, then painted over the whole mess with toxic smelling liquid and pink powder. I'm talking about you, acrylic nails. At first, your presence was panic inducing, like a wig I couldn't rip off. But since you were impossible to bite through, believe me, I tried, and made grasping onto hangnails so clumsy, I miraculously quit picking. One morning, I looked at fingers I'd long known as ratty, torn, and bleeding, and saw that they transformed to those of someone calm and pulled together. I came to think of them as my very own version of Wonder Woman's bulletproof cuffs. But while those shiny bands keep others from hurting her, you protect me from myself, and you help me present a less assailable self to the world. Now when I'm uneasy, I sit on my meditation cushion and I text a friend. I write a list of my worries and fears, read it to that loved one, then burn it. I go to CrossFit and lift weights high above my head before sending them crashing to the floor. From the inside out and from the outside in, I work through the feelings that had me gnawing on myself. Then I let them go. Mary Pauline Laurie, author of the novel Wildfire. Dear sprained ankle, what in God's name were you thinking, dropping in on me at the age of 16, humiliating me beyond humiliation? There I was, a 5'2", round, athletically challenged girl from Kansas. 4 months I had trained for Outward Bound, the famously life-altering expedition where I would scale the Colorado Rockies, rappel down sheer face cliffs, and brave 3 days solo in the wilderness. After 28 days, I will rise like a phoenix, sun-kissed, six-packed, armed with stories to impress for a long time. It was my destiny. The first day I stood in a circle with my fellow adventurers. Then the whistle blew for our 3-mile run to base camp. 10 seconds later, I jumped onto a rock and snap. I couldn't believe it. I didn't believe it until the patrol leader held my foot in his hand. "There's no way you can do this course," he said, looking up at me with a dark wonder. "Wow, this is a first." 6 hours later, I was staring out an airplane window in a stupor of shame, headed home to Prairie Village. My parents consoled me as I healed, then shipped me off several weeks later to a month-long teen travel program in Israel. It was me and 40 teenagers from Long Island. Them, a tornado of Farrah Fawcett, blowouts, leg warmers, and massive suitcases containing several clothing changes per day. Me, a lone Midwestern hayseed in track shorts, clutching my puny duffel bag. I was paired with golden hair Jessie, a bronze queen bee, whose breezy laugh and hot pink bikini made me feel like a loaf of Wonder Bread. But as the days passed, Jessie's velvet heart dissolved my insecurities. Together, we sneaked into fields to pick pears, bargained our way through noisy city markets, and rolled the glittering waves of the Mediterranean Sea. That summer turned out to be one of the best of my life. The next year, Jessie became my college roommate, then my New York City BFF. After one long work day, she cajoled me into margaritas at a Greenwich Village dive bar. That night, I met my future husband, with whom I eventually had two treasured children. 3 decades later, Jesse and I remain one another's touchstones. And so, sprained ankle, I need to express my gratitude. Thank you for leading me to everything that defines meaning and magic in my life today. And thank you for teaching me on that horrible, humiliating day, one whopper of an eventual lesson, that life is not linear, that 2 + 2 so rarely equals 4, and that what looks like misery in the moment just may be part of life's longer, wondrous plan. Julie Fingerish, San Francisco Bay Area writer at work on a comic memoir titled, And Then What? And we'll have more thank you letters coming up next week. Now it's about some food. Let's eat. Pull up a chair and dig into 3 delicious stories of Thanksgiving from a smorgasbord of pals communing by candlelight to multicultural families, bringing rich histories to the table. These tales of togetherness are as American as pumpkin pie. Sweet Home Carolina. For this military family, big holiday get-togethers are a break with tradition. Korean fare and ocean backdrops aren't typically associated with Thanksgiving, but for self-described Army brat Teresa Aniker and her husband James, sides of kimchi and post-dinner beach walks have been staples in the most traditional holiday meals they've ever had. Teresa, 32, a digital marketing manager, and James, 38, an Army National Guard soldier on deployment, both moved around a lot growing up. Teresa spent ages 8 to 10, then 10 to 14, 14 to 17 in Germany, where her father, now a retired Army sergeant, was stationed. And James, whose dad was also a military man, spent about half his childhood in Japan and the other half in North Carolina, where he eventually met Teresa in college. Throughout their childhoods, an extended family gathering was a logistical challenge. I think we saw my maternal grandmother once every 2.5 years between moves, Teresa says. Teresa and James now live near Charlotte with their children, 7-year-old Jasmine and 9-month-old Jackson, and have spent the past 6 Thanksgivings at James' parents' timeshare in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. As a kid, I didn't really have the normalcy of an annual family tradition, and now I'm experiencing it for the first time through my children's eyes. Teresa says, the guest list and menu vary, but dinner is incomplete without specialties from James' Korean-American mom, Betty. I didn't eat much Korean food before we got together, but now it's probably half my diet. Teresa says, one must have it on Thanksgiving Day. A Thanksgiving table is Betty's kimbap and Korean sushi rolls stuffed with scrambled eggs, vegetables, and ham. Another holiday favorite, her kimchi. The fermented cabbage gets its umami kick from salted shrimp and its heat from hot pepper flakes. A pungent combo that got people talking, Teresa and others through her pregnancy. That got Teresa through her pregnancy. It was the only thing I could eat, she says. Jamchae, clear potato, starch noodles, studded with onions and carrot, and topped with sliced beef and soy sauce. Is also a dish close to Teresa's heart. I love seeing my grandmother, who used to eat only American food, request it, she says. James won't get his fill of jamchae until he returns from his year-long stint in Kuwait. In the meantime, his wife's care packages, stocked with seaweed snacks and sweet sticky rice, will have to do. As for Teresa, the memory of her favorite Thanksgiving 5 years ago keeps her heart full. It was the last time my parents were there before my dad had his stroke, she says. We didn't cook much. We just sat around eating, playing dice, and chilling out in the hot tub. For many Americans, it's hard to imagine a Thanksgiving without basting and baking, but For Teresa and James, togetherness trumps turkey any month of the year. First, we feast. At this pre-Thanksgiving affair, there's more than enough food and friendship to go around. Self-employed real estate broker Molly Caldwell's annual Friendsgiving dinner, which she hosts with her former girlfriend Maureen Kattenbog in Brooklyn, in her Brooklyn townhouse they co-own and share, started with a predicament. How could they spend Thanksgiving Day table hopping to other people's meals, but still stock their own refrigerator with favorite holiday foods? Maureen and I always got invited to plenty of Thanksgiving, said Molly, who's 47. The problem was I wanted leftovers. Maureen, a multimedia artist, agreed that next day eats cold pumpkin pie for breakfast, turkey sandwiches smeared with cranberry sauce, like our Thanksgiving-inspired grilled cheese that's coming up on the next page, were non-negotiable. So she and Molly devised a plan that they throw a dinner party on Thanksgiving Eve, be free the next day to visit their loved ones, and come home to plenty of sweets and sides. The pair hosted their first Friendsgiving in 2011 when they lived in a cozy one-bedroom apartment in a building full of pals who happily pulled up chairs to Molly's makeshift dinner table, a red 1950s dinette paired with a card table and covered with a white sheet. Now a rotating cast of roughly 12 fill the seats, including a filmmaker, a flight attendant, and a model turned farmer. But the pillars of the feast remain constant: a from scratch spread and formal table setting. Proper dinners are rare these days, Molly said. I love to cook, and I want the meal to say to our wonderful friends, you're important to us. On the table, the sheet has been replaced by a linen cloth. There are also sparkled gold napkin rings, chocolate turkeys, and plenty of glassware and candles. The menu aims to be special, too. Molly's much-requested baked mushrooms are stuffed with a golden blend of breadcrumbs, bacon, and Romano cheeses, and her cranberry sauce is infused with warm cinnamon and cloves, zested orange peel, and star anise. Another elevated classic, pumpkin pie, which she tops with candied ginger whipped cream. These days, the evening begins around 5:30 with wine and appetizers on the brownstone's lower floor before the group moves upstairs for dinner. Once the plates are cleared, it's back downstairs for dessert, board games, and karaoke, which tends to end in a sing-along of either Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart or Celine Dion's It's All Coming Back to Me Now. One guest who never attended the Friendsgiving in person but will always be there in spirit is Molly's aunt, Meg Miller, who died last year. As Meg battled ovarian cancer, she turned to poetry for solace. In her final year, she sent her niece a poem called Perhaps the World Ends Here by Joy Harjo, which Molly has come to think of as the embodiment of her Friendsgiving. The last line say, at this table we sing with joy, with sorrow. We pray of suffering and remorse. We give thanks. Perhaps the world will end at the kitchen table while we are laughing and crying, eating of the last sweet bite. Pass the yuca, por favor. A Cuban-American family savors a good life. As Cubans, Marta and Ramon Caballos had never celebrated Thanksgiving, but they were eager to embrace the tradition after they fled to the U.S. in 1971 to escape Fidel Castro's dictatorship. They gathered up my mother, who was 11 at the time, and her siblings, and came over here with nothing, says their granddaughter, Mindy Fallis, 33, a food blogger, and mom to 6-year-old Chloe and 3-year-old Ashton. The family landed in Lakeville, Florida, and since cooking helped Marta keep their culture alive stateside, Thanksgiving wasn't a hard sell. Any excuse for us Cubans to get together and sit, eat, and talk, we would take, said Mindy. My husband isn't Cuban, so he doesn't always get it. He's like, do we have to have a party for Flag Day? The Caballos' first Thanksgiving was intimate, just them. Raymond's brother, Vicente, who had sponsored the Klan to come to America, and his family. But Marta and Ramon has since helped more relatives immigrate from Cuba, and their kids eventually had children of their own. So now Mindy's parents, Martha and Roger Kubela, often host up to 30 people in their four-bedroom home, 30 miles outside Orlando. Turkey and pumpkin and pecan pies typically make the menu. 47 years in America will have that effect, but there's never a shortage of Cuban cuisine. Tender chunks of starchy root vegetables, yuca dressed in garlicky mojo sauce, are satisfying alternatives to mashed potatoes and gravy, and making Mindy's great-grandmother's black beans is a necessity. The legumes are soaked overnight before being simmered with aromatic ingredients like yellow onions and green peppers, and then served over fluffy white rice and green pepper. And this is all Cuban. Black beans should taste like that, says Mindy. They have a ton of flavor from the veggies and spices, and they're soft without being mushy. Alongside the pies, you'll also find flan. The Cuban treat is often prepared in a pressure cooker, which makes it extra dense. But Mindy's paternal grandmother's recipe is baked in the oven, the old-fashioned way, resulting in an air cloud of vanilla custard that begs for its coating of gooey caramel sauce. Thanksgiving dinner never starts before 5 p.m., a schedule that lends itself to an evening after party that's as full of Cuban flavor as the food. Following the meal, the group moves to the poolside lanai to dance to salsa hits, sip mojitos, and play dominoes. As cigar smoke wafts through the night air and four generations move to the beat, Marta, now 77, remains actually aware of the true meaning of the holiday, gratitude. Freedom is taken for granted unless you've had it taken from you, she'd say. This is why not only this holiday, but everything we have in this country is so special to us. Now that's the Thanksgiving spirit. And now we're going to go through some of those recipes. Kimchi makes 10 servings, total time 30 minutes plus fermenting. 1 head of Napa cabbage, 1/2 cup of kosher salt, 1 tablespoon of small jarred salted shrimp, find them in an Asian market, 4 garlic cloves, 1/4 cup Korean hot pepper flakes, plus more to taste, 1/2 teaspoon of MSG optional, 1/2 Korean pear chopped optional, and 4 scallions chopped. You chop the cabbage into bite-sized pieces, then layer in a large bowl, sprinkling each layer with salt. Once cabbage is slightly wilted, about 1 hour, rinse off salt and place in a colander to continue draining. Squeeze out extra water with your hands or a towel. Meanwhile, in a blender, mix shrimp, garlic, pepper flakes, and MSG and pears, if you're using them, until smooth. In a large mixing bowl, pour shrimp mixture, add onions and cabbage, and mix with your hands. Place cabbage mixture in a large glass jar or container, seal jar, and let sit at room temperature for 1 day before refrigerating. Serve it chill. Kimbap makes 8 sushi rolls, total time 45 minutes. 2.5 cups of short grain rice, 8 ounces chopped spinach or baby spinach, 3 eggs, 2 tablespoons of sesame oil divided, 3.5 teaspoons of sea salt, 8 dried seaweed sheets, 1 large carrot, julienne, 8 yellow Korean pickled radishes, and 8 ounces of ham or spam. Prepare rice according to package instructions. Meanwhile, blanch spinach, drain, and set aside. In a small bowl, beat eggs. In a small skillet over medium heat, warm 1 teaspoon of sesame oil. Pour eggs into the skillet and make an omelet. When cooked through, remove omelet from skillet and slice into strips. Set aside. Once rice is cooked, add to a medium bowl with 1 teaspoon oil, add salt, and stir well. Lay out 1 sheet of seaweed paper, spread 1/8 of rice along seaweed, leave 1/8 border, line with 1/8 of carrots, radishes, ham, eggs, and spinach widthwise across the rice, roll tightly with or without bamboo shushi mat. Spread about 1/2 teaspoon of sesame oil on roll and slice into bite-sized pieces. Repeat process with remaining seaweed sheets, filling ingredients in oil. Chapcho makes 4 servings, total time 45 minutes. 2 tablespoons sugar, 2 tablespoons plus 1/2 teaspoon soy sauce divided, plus more for serving. 4 tablespoons sesame oil divided. 2 teaspoons minced garlic, about 2 cloves, 1 teaspoon sesame seed, 1 medium carrot, thinly sliced, 1 medium sweet onion, thinly sliced, 2 scallions, thinly sliced, 2 handfuls spinach, 6 ounces of Korean potato starch noodles, 5 ounces of lean beef sliced into 2-inch strips, kosher salt to taste, ground black pepper to taste. In a small bowl, combine sugar, 2 tablespoons soy sauce, 2 tablespoons sesame oil, garlic, and sesame seeds, and mix well. Set aside. In another small bowl, mix carrot, onion, scallions, and 1 tablespoon of prepared sauce. Blanch spinach, then place in a small bowl. Add remaining 1/2 teaspoon soy sauce, stir, and set aside. Cook noodles according to package instruction. Drain, rinse with cold water, and set aside. In a large skillet over medium heat, warm 1 tablespoon oil, add noodles, and cook for 5 minutes. Remove from skillet and place in a large bowl. To skillet, add remaining 1 tablespoon oil, add vegetables, and fry 2 minutes. Add beef and cook until medium rare, about 4 to 6 minutes, remove from heat. In a bowl with noodles, combine vegetables and beef, spinach, and remaining sauce. Toss well, add salt and pepper, and serve with additional soy sauce. Spiced cranberry sauce. Make 6 servings. Total time, 1 hour and 30 minutes. 12 ounces of fresh cranberries, 1/2 cup of brown sugar, 1 to 2 tablespoons zest of 1 blood or navel orange, finely chopped, 1/4 cup of juice of 1 blood or navel orange, 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon, 2 to 3 slices of peeled fresh ginger or 1 teaspoon of ground ginger, 2 cloves, 2 star anise pods. In a medium saucepan, combine all ingredients, cook over high heat, stirring, and bring into a boil. Reduce heat to medium-low and cook until cranberries pop and start to break down. Continue cooking until a spoon drag across bottom of the pan leaves a clean trail. Refrigerate overnight or at least 4 hours. Remove sliced ginger, cloves, and star anise and serve. Ginger whipped cream makes about 1 3/4 cups. Total time, 2 hours and 15 minutes, including chilling. 1 cup heavy cream, 1 1-inch piece of fresh ginger peeled and halved, 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract or 1/2 vanilla bean scraped, 1 tablespoon maple syrup, 1 tablespoon finely chopped crystallized ginger. In a small saucepan over low heat, warm cream and fresh ginger, watching closely to avoid boiling. Add vanilla extract, or if using vanilla beans, scrape seeds into mixture. Want small bubbles from around edges of saucepan, remove from heat, and let cool until room temperature. Refrigerate cream, cover for about 2 hours. At the same time, place a medium mixing bowl and metal beaters in the freezer. When ready to whip, remove ginger pieces, pour cream into chill bowl, add maple syrup, whip with cold beaters just until stiff peaks from form, gentle fold in crystallized ginger, and serve immediately over pie. Stuffed mushrooms. Makes about 30 mushrooms. Total time, 1 hour and 30 minutes. 35 to 40 large cremini or white mushrooms. 4 tablespoons unsalted butter. Divided. 1/4 cup finely diced bacon, about 1.5 ounces. 4 large shallots, finely diced. 1 tablespoon of thyme leaves, chopped. 1/4 teaspoon kosher salt. 2/3 cup of Italian seasoned crumbs, 1/4 cup finely grated Romano cheese, plus more 4 sprinkling ground black pepper to taste, extra virgin olive oil. Place racks in center of oven and preheat to 425 degrees. Clean mushroom and trim rough bottoms of stems. Remove stems and finely dice along with 5 or 6 of the largest mushroom caps. In a medium skillet over medium heat, melt 2 tablespoons of butter. Add bacon and cook until fat is rendered. 1 to 2 minutes. Add shallots and thyme. Cook until shallots are tender and begin to caramelize. 4 to 5 minutes. Stir in mushrooms, stems, and salt. Cook stirring occasionally until mixture is tender and mushrooms are cooked through. 8 to 10 minutes. Add remaining 2 tablespoons of butter. Once melted, place mixture in a large bowl and mix in breadcrumbs and cheese. Season with pepper. Oil 2 large baking sheets and arrange mushrooms in a simple layer on each. Stuff each mushroom cavity with a rounded spoonful of bacon mixture. Filling should form a tall mound about the cavity. At this point, you can refrigerate trays up to 1 day. Bring to room temperature before baking. Drizzle mushrooms with oil and sprinkle with cheese. Bake until tender and golden brown. 20 to 25 minutes, serve warm. Yuca with mojo. Make 6 servings, total time 50 minutes. 1.5 to 2 pounds of yuca peeled and cut into 2.5 chunks. 1 tablespoon plus 1 teaspoon kosher salt divided. 1/2 cup of olive oil. 6 garlic cloves minced. 1 small yellow onion, finely diced, juice of 2 limes. In a large saucepan, place yuca and 1 tablespoon of salt, cover with room temperature water, and bring to a boil over high heat. Reduce heat to maintain a slow simmer, cover, and cook until fork tender, about 30 minutes. Drain. Remove woody string from the center of each yuca piece. Arrange on a serving platter. In a small saucepan over medium-low heat, cook olive oil, garlic, remaining 1 teaspoon salt, and onions until garlic and onion soften. Pour over yuca and toss to coat. Squeeze lime juice over top and serve immediately. Cuban black beans. Makes 8 cups, total time 3 hours, plus at least 12 hours for soaking. 1/2 pound of dry black beans, 1 large green pepper chopped, 3 tablespoons of olive oil, 3/4 cup chopped yellow onion, about 1 medium onion, 2 large garlic cloves minced, 1 teaspoon dry oregano, 1 heaped teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of ground black pepper, 1 tablespoon of sugar, 1 teaspoon of ground cumin, 2 tablespoons of white vinegar. In a large heavy bottom pot, add beans and cover with water. Soak overnight for at least 12 hours. When you're ready to cook, drain beans and add 5 cups of water and 1/2 the green pepper to pot. Bring to a boil over high heat, then reduce heat. Cover and simmer for 60 minutes, stirring frequently. It means that the beans will absorb most of the liquid. Add water 1 cup at a time to keep them simmering. Meanwhile, in a medium skillet, warm oil over medium-low heat. Add remaining pepper, onion, and garlic and saute until vegetables are soft and translucent. Remove from heat. When beans are finished simmering, transfer a slotted ladle full, no liquid, to skillet, using a wooden spoon or a meat mallet. Mash beans into onion mixture, stir to combine. Add skillet contents and 2 cups water into pots of beans and stir. Cover and simmer for 60 more minutes. Add 3 more cups of water, oregano, salt, pepper, sugar, cumin, and vinegar to pot and stir. Cover and simmer for 30 minutes, stirring occasionally. And a mojito makes one drink. Total time, 5 minutes. 10 mint leaves plus a sprig, juice of lime plus a wedge, 1 to 2 tablespoons of sugar, crushed ice, 1 shot with white rum, a half a cup of club soda. In the bottom of a Collins glass, place mint, lime juice, and sugar. Using a muddler, crush mint leaves. Fill glass with ice almost to the top, then add rum. Top with club soda and stir. Garnish with lime wedges and mint sprigs. And if you want something fast, a fine substitute for a Greenspan's tart and salty tamarind, 1 cup homemade or store-bought cranberry sauce mixed with a half a cup of chopped brine, cured olives, packaged fried onions will mimic the bite and crispiness of fried shallots. Or if you have leftover green bean casserole in your fridge, skip the fresh cooked beans and the shallots or onions. Just top each meal with something good and a half a cup of time-honored and time-saving holiday dishes. Faxy fancy sandwiches you can make from a large bowl, halfway ice water over high heat. Bring a large pot of salted water to boil. Add 8 ounces of trim green beans and cook until tender, about 3 minutes. And once you drain it, you have add some pumpernickel, add a little bit of cranberry to it, and there you have a roasted treat along with your turkey. And next week, we'll bring you more on gratitude after Thanksgiving. Well, we've run out of time for this edition of Oprah Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. I am Shadate Hargett Hill, reading for Oprah Magazine and the Triangle Radio Reading Service. See you next time on the radio. Happy Thanksgiving.